What does a truly resilient transport system look like? For this podcast, I interviewed Patrick Andrews from River Simple about resilience and how it applies to peak oil and climate change, the benefits of cooperation and collaboration versus competition, and why the emerging field known as groupthink is the only way we will get the cuts we need to tackle climate change. This is Blake from We Are Futureproof, and I'm here with
Patrick Andrews from River Simple.
Welcome, Patrick. Well, let's get straight into it. You want to talk about resilience. Can you tell me how that applies to personal transport?
Resilience is something that I've become very interested in just recently, having read the Transition Handbook, which is all about how society can deal with peak oil.
Okay.
The combination of peak oil and climate change, and how we had a much more resilient society many years ago. For example, we wouldn't have to worry about power cuts because we'd have a storage of chopped wood in the back.
Right.
And if there was a bad harvest, well, we had a diversity of crops. So the bad harvest for wheat, we'd still have other crops which we had to feed ourselves.
Right. Right.
And maybe we'd have some food stored. It's apparent nowadays when there was a fuel crisis, a fuel blockage two or three years ago, Sainsbury's advised the government they had 3 days of food left.
Oh, wow.
In the country. They just don't store food anymore. The government used to, but if you're a corporation and you've got to maximise shareholder value, then resilience has an expense.
Mm.
You see that as an expense, and so you don't do it. You keep food stores overseas. And so if we expect with peak oil, which I expect, there'll be oil shortages or there'll be crises and shocks or price, because the peak oil means that as the demand increases, the production can't meet it anymore.
Right.
And so there's just, and naturally production is falling. We're not going to pump any more oil than we are now. So how would we cope with that? And are the systems in place? If you're dependent on getting petrol into cars, and there's a blockage or there's a shortage or it's not available, then you can't drive. If the cars are powered by fossil fuels, and maybe if there'll be power cuts too, and so cars that are reliant on the electricity grid are going to stop. So that's one of the reasons why we think that hydrogen, which is what is our River Simple car is powered by, hydrogen is part of the answer to resilience, because you can store hydrogen. You can't store electricity. Or if you do, it's very inefficient. You can store it in hydroelectrics. You can pump water up and then pump it down again, for example. So I think hydrogen cars are, that's one of the reasons why we think hydrogen is at least part of the solution for the future of powered transport. Because it's a way of storing energy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't really thought of that. But it is true, because hydrogen, the when you look at electricity, there's batteries and then there's hydrogen.
Yes.
As ways of running a car. And you've said that, well, hydrogen perhaps makes sense for long-term journeys.
Yeah.
Whereas electricity might make more sense for short distance
journeys. Yeah, because of the weight of batteries. Yeah, exactly.
But then if the electricity grid breaks down, then we have a problem of where we're going to get
batteries.
Yeah. And it could be, well, maybe something like Project Better Place, where they talk about storing batteries, where you'd go into a little depot and they would change out your battery for you every 100 miles or something that could work. But you still have a problem if a lot of batteries just kind of
over time
they dissipate.
Exactly,
and so
exactly.
they'd be running out.
Yeah,
so you'd be keeping always a backup storage of batteries, basically.
Exactly, which is not
very sensible,
very sensible,
is it?
Exactly. So I'm not saying, I think there is a wider point about taking into account resilience, and it may be part of that is batteries too, because batteries can keep their charge for quite a long time, I think most of them are the modern ones.
Yeah.
But it's about thinking about resilience in designing the transport systems for the next, because in the future these shocks are coming, it seems clear.
In a way, I was thinking, in terms of resilience, in a way, resilience means something that would be better would be where you have, like you said, you have a combination of things to rely on,
exactly,
a combination of resources to rely on. So if the battery ran out, then you would have, say a plug-in hybrid would be a good source then, of transport, because you'd have either the battery or you'd have the little you'd have fuel, but then again, fuel is going to run out with peak oil. So
yeah, I suppose picture is, it seems to me that having hydrogen cars and battery cars and maybe some for certain applications, maybe still some fossil fuel cars, may be a very sensible strategy.
Solar cars?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, absolutely.
Sounds cool.
But I noticed that there was the solar taxi who drove around the world. He had a bank of solar panels he towed behind his car, but he also would plug into the grid most days too. So
that's cheating.
But at home in Switzerland he had a panel of solar. So he said, "I'm just charging up with the same energy. So I'm gathering the solar energy.
Right.
But some of it I bring with me, and some of it I don't."
So the real question we have set before us is, if we look to the future, we really have to think, what is a truly resilient system? So
exactly.
It really demands that we kind of really think freshly about. Right now, we just think about the technologies as being isolated from one another. So we just think of the car, and then the fuel is separate from that. And then the people who make the tires is separate from that. You know, who makes the steel is separate from that. It seems like we have to really put all the pieces together. And I think that's what I like about River Simple, is you are trying to kind of conceive of this system in a new way and seeing how all the parts work together.
Yes, yes, exactly. I mean, there's an idea in at least in open source software of modularity, where you can split things apart and the whole doesn't collapse just because one part is slower in developing, or the things can work with a certain amount of independence, and that is an element of resilience too. So we are definitely trying to think about the system as a whole. With the open source development we're working on, the idea is you have a very distributed design department, and as people get more time, they're able to commit more time, and they drop out because they've got other reasons to do so, but the product can carry on. So definitely resilience is what we're trying to build into the system, and look at it as a system rather than as individual bits of making profit, because that's going to be what's needed. That's what's needed for in society, I think.
Well, you also, when I think of that, I think of cooperation versus competition.
Yes.
Because quite a strong model of the car companies right now is competition. Amazingly, no car companies are really shining through right now. They're all kind of going down. So how does cooperation offer us a better model?
Yes, I mean, cooperation is really important in resilience. If in a crisis, then if you're at home and in a crisis, if you know all your neighbours and have good relationships with them because of shared endeavours in the community, then you'll fairly easily be able to find someone to help you. And if you're on your own and you're reliant on money, you've got to try and find a hospital, get in your own car. So that's an example in the community. Collaboration means we all have things we're good at and not so good at.
Yeah.
And so the more we share, the more we're able to build on each other's strengths, and we end up having multiple benefits for everybody. So we're great believers in collaboration. Collaboration also allows you to develop new ideas far more quickly, and that's what's needed now. Competition tends to come in when you've got an established idea and you want to do small improvements to it. Then competition's really good and sort of healthy at a certain level. But when you've got a new idea and you want to, like with hydrogen cars or electric transmissions or batteries, what the society needs is develop them quickly. And we don't get that if 100 companies work independently on their own ideas. What we do get is if those 100 companies all chip in and share ideas, and you get much quicker results and much better, more robust results, and you spot flaws more quickly. So that's why we, at this time in the development of the auto industry, collaboration is the only way that we're going to achieve the cuts in emissions that we need as a planet. So we think collaboration is the only way to go for the next few years.
That's really interesting, because something that it's kind of a different topic, but something I'm very interested in is collective consciousness.
Yes, okay.
I think a lot of us have had different experiences of this, but probably don't really realize it. But we could also call it groupthink, or just something that comes out of a shared group experience, where oftentimes it's when people come together, there's something that's greater than the sum of the parts that comes out of that. And it seems a lot more, what I read and what I study, that there's much more emergence now, this kind of collective intelligence, which I'm sure happens at all different levels in biologically, that leaps, great leaps have been made when species start acting together and seem propelled forward by some new idea or some new goal.
I mean, I completely agree. As I understand it, almost the definition of holistic is that the sum of the parts is greater than the whole is greater than the sum of the parts,
yeah.
And that and that when you bring a large number together who are communicating, mm-hmm. you get brand new properties.
And they're working towards a bigger vision of
exactly,
something new,
yes,
as
exactly.
well, isn't it?
Exactly. It becomes a separate identity.
Yeah.
And we see that in the body, very simply, there's the holarchies. So you get cells which come together and they form organs. And if you split up a liver, for example, you can examine the cells and it's got certain properties, but the liver has its own properties and it's a bunch of cells. And the human body is a bunch of organs together, and the humans behave in ways which can never be predicted just by looking at the individual organs. So an organisation, similarly, you put people, individuals together, and the behaviour of the organisation is more than just the sum of the parts.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more connected they are, the more sense of identity and purpose, and the more purposeful and creative they can be, the whole, the greater the sense of identity and the greater sense of the power. And yeah, so I think definitely I'm fairly new to the open source world, but it's become clearer and clearer to me that open source cars, it's simply a matter of not if, but when. That is the future of car design and development, is open source with collaboration across the world. And then individual manufacturers downloading the ideas and developing them to point of producing them. But it's inevitable, because that's the way the world is working with the internet, that we're just communicating much better.
How do you see making a profit than in an open source market? Because certainly that's something that's going to come up for businesses who say, well, look, I've got shareholder values, I've got to make money here. I can't, if I share it on the internet, everybody's going to rip off my ideas. And
well, it's interesting because
it seems a downer to talk about protecting when we just talked about something that's about emerging and coming together in ideas. But
well, you need both.
How do you see that?
You need both. If you look at the car companies nowadays, there's a very, very little difference between them technically. They don't compete on their technical differences. They compete on the brand largely.
Mm-hmm.
There's very small differences when Honda produces a new car, Toyota tears it apart, reassembles it. You know, they might patent a lot, but they don't rely much on patents. It's really about branding is the difference. If you look at a Ford or a BMW, years ago there were bigger differences, and now the differences aren't so great in terms of how long they last, how well they're built, how they perform. Not so much difference. In a way, we see the open source in one way is outsourcing our R&D department. We still have to produce cars and produce a good product and provide a fantastic service, and that isn't changing.
Okay.
We're not shy about making profit, but what we are clear about being a social enterprise is that if we make a profit but don't achieve our goals, we've failed. If we achieve our goals and make only a marginal profit, then that's success to us.
Okay.
So we'd like to do both, but one is clearly before the other, and the purpose is before the profit. But we think we'll do both. And we think the downside of giving our drawings away, if lots of people take the ideas and we get more of these cars in the world, then that's a success in its own.
Right, right. So there's the altruistic.
Well, I think
sense of altruism.
What's the worst that can happen, if you like?
Yeah.
I think we, in a way, we think we're acting from pure self-interest, but we like to think it's an enlightened self-interest.
Yeah.
But it's in our interest to save the world, and this is the best way of achieving it. But business, you've got to use business, because that's perhaps the most powerful force in our society nowadays, is business. So harness that.
Are you inspired by trying to save the world, or inspired by trying to bring in the future?
It's something I've been thinking about recently. Is it's much more about, I find the idea of saving the world tends to have negative connotations with some people. It has evangelical tones. It's often not very helpful. And I just think what we're talking about is what is the future of society, of our civilization, and the future of the auto industry. And given peak oil, given climate change, given the emerging rising levels of consciousness of people, I think this is the way to go. This is what is inevitable, and whether it's us or somebody else, we're going to have cars that are developed more collaboratively. We're going to have more fuel-efficient cars. We're going to have lighter cars. All these things, to me, are inevitable. So it's the future of transport, and it's very exciting to be at the leading edge of the future of transport. And that's much more exciting than talking about trying to save the planet. The planet is changing. That's clear.
Yeah.
My own view is all the evidence seems to be that climate change is happening. It's a matter of how much.
Mm-hmm.
Drastic change is coming. So it's just about let's take a positive way, because that's what gives people positive energy. Mm-hmm. And there's no point in sitting around being miserable.
You've been listening to We Are Future Proof. For more information about this and other projects, or to receive our newsletter, please visit our website at www.wearefutureproof.org.uk.